KFYO, good morning. It's 7:08 with Tom and Laura. Mayor Glenn Robertson joining us the morning after a city council meeting. Boy, it was a little lively last night, wasn't it?
You know, we have a tendency to put on passionate council meetings every once in a while, but that's all right. That just means we've got a lot of folks that really care about Lubbock, and that's a good thing. I've got no issue with that.
All right, let's go ahead and we'll get this out of the way, but you guys formally accepted Medina's resignation last night at the council meeting, and I just wanted to ask you a question relative to that. Basically, he's just quitting the job, correct?
Exactly. Sam resigned and is going to go on, and I'm assuming trying to just put his family back together and let things heal. You know, he was in a position where he was on unpaid leave and couldn't earn a living for his family and didn't know how long this was going to be drawn out in the judicial system. And I think really decided he needed to go earn a living because he couldn't do that and stay on unpaid administrative leave.
Okay. Now, I'm just going to ask this question, and this may dovetail into another issue, but I noticed when I was watching Channel 2 last night, as the council meeting was happening, that Latrell Joy had asked the council to excuse her, which is actually recusing herself from voting on this particular issue because she represents Eric Medina, who is Sam's son.
Right.
Okay, now, is she legally obligated to do that, or I mean, is there a legal obligation there, or is it just an ethical obligation? What is that?
Well, what she did last night is different than recusal. You can recuse yourself if you have, and you're supposed to recuse yourself by state law, if you have financial interest in a situation that's, I think the margin is 10% of your income. So, but what she did last night is just really was asking council if anybody had an objection to her excusing herself from the vote because of her representation. And if anybody had objected to it, she would have had to stood up there and voted. But nobody had any objections. So.
Well, the whole thing is if she stayed up there and she did vote, then that's going to stir a pot. And
well, there, like I said, there's no legal requirement for her not to.
No, I get it, that. But I think the public outcry would have been, "Hey, you know."
Well, I think it was
a
smart.
Seen as a conflict of interest.
I think it was a smart move on Latrell to do that. I think it was the proper thing to do, and I think she felt like she needed to. And so, I've got no issue with it at all.
Okay. Now let's juxtapose that with, her connection with the North and East Lubbock Community Development Corporation. Now, as I understand it, Latrell and David Langston are partners in a law firm that actually represents the North and East Lubbock Community Development Corporation. Yes?
Well, you know, I don't know that the law firm, one of the law partners, David Langston is on that board, and David does some work for the North and East Lubbock.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Now, relatively speaking, because she works in the same law firm and he's involved with them, and she's basically a partner of his. Is that not a conflict of interest to have her vote on those issues that, council issues with the North and East Lubbock Community Development Corporation?
I think it'd be a reach to call that a conflict, and you got to go back and look at state law on what conflict of interest is for us elected officials. If you go by law, no, it's not a conflict. Now, if Latrell had made the decision that she wanted to recuse, she could have filled out the paperwork and recused from it. But, that is a giant law firm. There's 40, 50, 60 partners, I think. They're based out of Lubbock, Amarillo, and in several other locations. It would be, you could reach into a lot of areas. If you've got a partner, in another office that's working on something else city-related, I think you're going to have to find something that's really more of a concrete conflict than just the fact that one of her law partners is either on that board or doing some work for him.
No, I'm just asking these questions because a lot of people have asked me these questions and say, well, hey, man, you know, what do you think? You know, to me, it, I mean, I know that it's going to put somebody in an awkward position, legal or not. Now, we've talked about what's behind door number one and door number two. Now let's go to door number three. Let's go back in history a little bit. Now, when Victor Hernandez and Leanne Dumbold were, you know, kind of going at it and all the this stuff, and the fur was flying there. And then there was, you know, came out of that, a lot of people were trying to get Victor to resign, and he wasn't going to resign, and, you know, the recalls came up and all that. But when these investigations were going on, Victor voted himself to be involved in his own investigation. Now, how does that work?
Well, here again,
is that legal or is that ethical? Or
the lawyers told him that he would not have to recuse. He checked, and that it was up to him to recuse himself if he felt like it was necessary, and he didn't. So therefore, he did not recuse himself.
Okay, because I know, and as you well know, there were a lot of people that were bent out of shape about that. And I know what you're saying. Legally, no.
Well, and it's such ancient history, you know, that's been hashed and rehashed. And that is the one thing that I will tell you that this council has agreed upon. We did not agree on the Miss Dumball situation, and it was very divisive for this council. But once we got to the point where there was four votes to terminate her, we did come together and say, you know what, we're going to put that behind us and move on. So I'm not going to rehash
that. Yeah, and I get that. But what I was actually just trying to do was compare those three situations, because they did have some similarities, but they all teeter on the realm of what the attorneys say is legal or not legal, right? Correct?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, 7:15, we'll be back with Glenn. Tom, Laura, and Mayor Glenn Robertson. After the morning after, or after the morning after the city council meeting.
That's easy for you to say.
Well, actually, not really. it was a, you know, it seemed to be a little bit more controlled belligerence by some of the speakers last night, but there were a few dicey moments.
Well,
I kind of felt like it was in a revival meeting at some point.
What has changed is since we changed the way the speaker's comments are structured. And we did it intentionally, and it's working as I kind of hoped it would. Now the people that are going up there to make a lot of times completely outlandish statements, misrepresenting the facts with political agendas, we've got them on the agenda, and council can respond back. And you saw that last night. You saw a lot of people make really bad statements with bad facts. And council has now got the opportunity to say, well, you know, wait a minute. What you're saying is just not true. Here are the facts. And I think that's going to be good because it will get the truth out on the table, which is always good. If we can get facts on the table, we'll always make good decisions. The times that our council has made bad votes, in my opinion, or when we've had bad facts on the table. So anything that we can do to increase the chance of us having good information, I'm all for. And last night was an example of it.
Okay. When you're talking about the quality of information, then one of the issues with this NELCDC thing was the salary of, or the figure of $30,000, which was supposedly said by Quincy White, the assistant, now the assistant city manager, said that we were going to pay back, or that they would pay the city back $30,000 that was diverted to, Thomas Harris. And then now Quincy White says, I misspoke.
Correct.
So, is that one of those? Would that have made a difference? Would that if he had not said that and he said we're not paying that back? Would that have made a difference way back when on the vote?
You know, I don't know because the only person I can speak for is myself, and I think two people voted against funding. And what we're talking about is the original $251,000 that was voted on to fund NELDC to get them through the end of last year and this year. I don't know if it would have changed or not. If it's material enough that it would change people's opinion, I would need to bring it back. But you need to realize that the majority of that money's been expended. And it's easy to go back after the fact with 2020 hindsight and see everything and say, oh, well, you should have done this, this, and this. What we have to do as a council is learn from it and make sure something like that doesn't happen again. You can't go back and recapture dollars. So I hope what we'll do is this will come back up. And when the funding comes back up, we're going to have a work session on it at the next council meeting. These things will be discussed. They'll be discussed in depth. And what we've got to do, of course, we've got to let all the emotion from the citizens and let them get that out. But once we get into work session, we got to try to divorce ourselves from all the personalities and emotion and all the hard feelings that have been created over this because it's been sensationalized a little bit. And then we've got to just truly look at the facts and figure out what we need to do going forward within the ELDC.
Yeah. Do you think when this was actually voted on originally, I'm just curious in your mind, because there were two people that voted against it. I think it was
Karen Gibson and Todd Klein.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. When you originally voted for that, did you perceive this $30,000? I mean, were you, in your mind, was that kind of like a loan for operating capital, or was it just something? I mean, did you ever think we were really going to get it back? Because he said they were going to pay it back.
You know, we were told some of that money would come back. The main reason I voted for it, though, is I felt like it was going to reduce our risk to our taxpayers. They have that northern half of King's Dominion, the undeveloped half of all those lots, and there's maintenance and expenses on those lots. They also own an interest in the shopping center over there. If we were to allow, and this is what we were told, and here again, we've got to find out in this next meeting if these facts are true, but we were told that evening that if we let NELCDC go under, that all of the liability for those lots, that partnership, everything would revert back to the city. And in my mind, it was a pretty easy decision. Do you spend $251,000 to try to keep this thing going, to keep from having the taxpayers end up with all this liability of millions of dollars?
I can hear the wheels turning in Laura's mind. She's saying, "Who?" When you say who, you know, that you guys were told that it would revert back to the city in you know, a situation of default, and we would have to assume that expense. Who was the who that told you all that?
I know that Quincy White was one of them, and I believe Sam Medina was in that meeting and said it. I'll have to go back and read the tapes, but I do know that we were told that.
And I'm just curious. Yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to nail you to the floor or anything. Okay, I think we're going to go to the phones, or no? No? Okay, no. This is kind of an interesting thing. It's going to unfold. Like I said, you're going to have the work session, and that's going to be on the 28th?
I'm not sure.
The 27th.
I don't have my calendar with me, but it's toward the end of this month.
Yeah, we're scheduled to have you back on the 28th, okay. So that would be on the 27th. All right, we're going to have a rate increase for Atmos Energy. I guess the first reading was approved last night.
Correct.
We'll go into the details of that and the nuts and bolts and why we did what we did if you missed it. Look at me. KFYO, good morning. It's 7:39. Tom and Laura back with Glenn Robertson after the city council meeting. And I don't know if you can say this or not, if you can respond to this question, but last night at one point, the attorneys that were sitting up there to the left of James Loomis were just chuckling and biting their tongues, and I mean just shaking. They were laughing.
Well, I might have been the cause of that. James Loomis was sick last night.
Oh, nice.
And he's really fighting a severe cold, and he was at that point, and it's getting late, and his voice was getting, you know, that late evening, I call it the Barry White voice when you're getting sick. and he had to read a very long agenda item.
I did notice him say, "All right, baby."
Yeah. And that's really where he was at. And he was exhausted. I mean, he took his wife to, they built a retirement home up in Arkansas. And so he had driven back from Arkansas this week. And like I said, James is not feeling good and was sick anyhow. Well, he was having to read the just most ridiculously long agenda item you can imagine. And
it was a bunch of legal descriptions of lots.
And he's trying to get through it very fast, and so he's misreading it a little bit. And I'm sitting down there kind of making faces at the attorneys because they know that James is misreading a few of these postings. And they had a hard time holding it together, but it was getting late. And, you know, understand, we start as a council at 3, and we always have our executive session from 3 to 6. And then we go downstairs at 6:15 and start down there. So this was, you know, 7:30, 8 o'clock. We'd been going pretty hard at it, almost 6 hours. And when you're sick and not feeling good, which James was not last night, he did a tremendous job considering the way he was feeling. But we sometimes get a little simple that late in the evening.
It was actually kind of amusing because we were just sitting there laughing. We were going, look. And then who's the guy that's sitting right to his left? Was that Satterwhite?
Yes.
It was so funny because he was trying so hard not to laugh. And then he looked up and it just looked like he was looking straight into the camera.
Well, those guys, I mean, they're very professional and they really are. And they're very good at what they do. I make a lot of time my job and I may overdo my job sometimes. But when it starts getting really tense and heavy, you know, lightening the situation never hurts.
Oh, no.
And
so what you're saying last night?
I kind of pushed their buttons, and they had a hard time not reacting to some probably facial expressions that I was making towards them as James was reading
the
agenda.
Well, nice to see that you can assume the role of the rodeo clown every now and
well,
then.
Well, you know, I may be overqualified for it.
All right. When we come back here in just a sec, we're going to be talking about the rate increase and the nuts and bolts, how that works and why we did it. 7:41. KFYO 7:45 with Collins and Mac, Lubbock's First News. It is Friday. Welcome to the weekend. It's a little bit chilly on the outside, but we can live with that. Temps at 38 degrees right now. Hopefully the wind's not going to get up there too bad today, but we'll deal with it. All right, Glenn Robertson in the house, and Laura, it was interesting last night. I didn't see, and there was not, and I think the council was also stunned with disbelief, that there was not one person that stood up to talk about the Atmos energy rate increase.
Well, let's talk about it this morning. And people may want to ask some questions. Why now?
Well, we've been having negotiations and quite frankly, just almost a battle with Atmos for almost a year. They wanted to change the way they do rates out here. They want to go to system area wide rates. We felt like that would have the city of Lubbock subsidizing smaller cities. The other issue was just the amount of rate increase they wanted. So we had outside attorneys that are specialists in dealing with utility rate cases been handling this for us.
What a job.
Oh, yeah. It's I tell you, it's intricate because these guys are experts at testifying before the PUC and the Railroad Commission and all of this, and they really know the ins and the outs of it. And what this boiled down to is a compromise between what Atmos wanted, what we wanted as a city of Lubbock, and what we knew we would get to if we fought them all the way through till next October and let it go to the Railroad Commission. Railroad Commission is very easy to read. All you got to do is look at their past cases. And if we fought this thing to the end, we felt like it was going to cost our ratepayers a lot more. And we weren't happy with the decision.
Well, from what I understand, though, isn't like appearing in front of the Railroad Commission kind of like walking into Judge Wapner's People's Court? I mean, you don't want to be there unless you absolutely have to.
Well, I asked Jim Grilt to go down and testify before him this last summer. I couldn't go. And so Jim went in my place, did a tremendous job. But I'll tell you, Mr. Grilt left there with a realization that the Railroad Commission does not care about the consumer. Now, you got to understand they're elected officials. And the gas companies, the utility companies, donate heavily to their campaigns. I mean, they underwrite their campaigns. So we've got an issue that we need to work with other cities. That's got to change at state level. We've got to get our state legislature to say, you know what, the Railroad Commission's really good at regulating oil and gas. That's what they do. But they do not need to be hearing rate cases for consumers on natural gas. It's ridiculous. They don't know how to do it. They're leaning towards the gas companies. It's terrible for the communities. So we're going to reach out to our legislatures. I'm going to call Senator Duncan and both representatives from our area. We'll be back down there. We'll have our lobbyists talking about it at the next session. I'll probably be there testifying in front of the Texas legislature that we need to do something about this. But bottom line is the average consumer in Lubbock's rate's going to go up about a little less than $3 per month on the average on their gas bill. Problem is, if you're a big user, that number's not correct. That's just kind of the medium of the users in Lubbock. So there will be a rate increase. I believe it's going to be effective upon our second reading. I'll have to double check on the effective date. But we reached the best compromise we could. I told people last night we're not happy with it. Atmos Energy's not really happy with it, so we probably came to the fairest conclusion we could.
So, just to put a period on the sentence, okay, Atmos wanted a rate. You guys essentially made a counteroffer for the city, and both people agreed because...
Yes, after a year, literally a year of negotiations, hearings, we came up with as close to a middle ground as we could.
Right.
I will tell you, the two people that we got to give credit for that voted for this last night are Karen Gibson and Victor Hernandez. And the reason is this was a tough vote because you're voting to authorize Atmos to raise their rates. And both of those individuals are in contested campaigns. And it's real hard to get the facts out about this type of rate negotiation and how long we've gone through it and how hard it is to vote for this type of thing when you're up for re-election. So
yeah,
took some political courage last night.
Right, and Victor did himself state that, you know, this is one of those situations where maybe his opponents are going to raise a stink about this, but he's in an election thing, and he just felt like this was the right thing to do and tasty way to do it. And you got to agree, because you don't want it to go to the Railroad Commission.
No, we're going to lose if it goes to the Railroad Commission. There's no doubt.
Yeah. All right, Glenn Robertson will be back at 7:51. KFYO 7:55 with Tom and Laura. Good morning. It's Friday. Welcome to the weekend. Mayor Glenn Robertson in the house. Morning after the city council meeting. Don't forget, Dave Langston's going to be in the house. He's in the house.
He's
we're going to have him on the
here.
Air.
Yeah, yeah, we have a mayor and a former mayor.
Yeah, and I watched the former mayor shake hands with the mayor.
We've got a mayor and a real mayor.
Here's the thing. It's very evident. Don't get me wrong. I don't think you guys are, you know, have like, I don't think you have a Gary voodoo doll and Gary's got a Glenn voodoo doll and you guys go home at night and go, but, you know, it's evident that, you know,
I'm glad to
you're not wild about Gary and he's not wild about thee.
I'm just glad the listening off audience didn't have to see your face when you was making whatever that noise was.
That's disturbing.
You know, the deal with Dr. Zing and me has really been completely blown out of proportion. It came out when the Ashcroft report came out, and when they released that to the media, the phone started ringing. And everybody gravitated to one section of that document and were asking questions about it, and I answered the questions. And then you start getting headlines like mayor calls for resignation. Well, that's not true. You know, I did say that I felt like Gary should have been terminated last October. Still feel like that. The board chose not to. And I think where we've got to be really clear is where the charter draws the line. Gary Zing works for that board. He does not work for the city council. He reports to that board. And I think their board chairman did a good job yesterday of stating that they've got full faith in Gary Zing to carry out his duties. And so, you know, the bottom line is it really doesn't matter what I think. I'm an ex officio member of that board, but I don't vote on that board. So if that board is happy with Dr. Zing's performance, that's really the only thing that carries any weight. My opinion doesn't carry weight on this matter. So, you know, it's one of these things that I think we need to put behind us. The Ashcroft report brought it back up. But I do think this is another thing that's really been sensationalized this week. And the best thing that we can do is realize is that, you know what, the board's happy with their CEO. They're going to move forward with them. And what we need to do is put all this behind us, and we need to get back to worrying about 2019 and taking care of business.
Yeah, I get that. Now, just before we put this behind us, I got to ask you.
He's not going to let it ride.
No, I just want to ask you. You know, because in some articles yesterday they were posted, they were saying that, you know, they may like reassign Gary to another position. And if he was reassigned, what position would that be?
Well, what's happening there, to my understanding, there's about two board members that have been visiting amongst themselves, trying to come up with some sort of plan to solve the problem. This isn't a board talking. This is a couple of board members. You've got to remember that when you're a board member or a council member or anything, you have no authority making capability unless you're as meeting as a body. So this is a couple of members talking about it on the outside. I don't think you'll see anything happen there.
Okay. All right. Thanks for coming in, man.
You bet.
I guess we can officially say that one's in the rearview mirror.
Yes, sir.
At least for this week.
Well, it is, in my opinion.
Okay, good. All right, Glenn. Excuse me. Thanks for being with us this morning. You got any plans for spring break?
Just get through it.
You're not gonna pull it out and shine the Harley up and drive around the loop at 125 miles an hour?
Well, I may get the motorcycle out, but it won't be at 125 around the loop.
All right. Thanks for being with us, man.
Wise decision.
7:59.